Hi, good morning, and welcome to Studies Through the Bible with Pastor Zach Ebarb. I am obviously Zach Ebarb, and today we are going to continue our podcast looking at an overview of 1 and 2 Kings. I mentioned to you guys in our shorter episode last week that we were going to just do 2 Samuel by itself so that we could put Chronicles and Kings together. And so when we're talking about these books, we're going to try to talk about both of them together. And the reason for this is that, obviously, first of all, like the book of Samuel and 1 and 2 Samuel, and of course the book of 1 and 2 Chronicles, 1 and 2 Kings was originally one book. When we talked about when this was translated into the Septuagint, the Greek form was brought into play, that they separated these two books. We really don't know why. They just felt like they needed to separate them, I guess, to kind of show a shift in what was going on in the history of the kingdom. But we're going to talk about these two books together because they are one fluent telling of a period of time in the history of Israel where we see all of Israel's kings, both good and bad. A divided kingdom. We're going to see Solomon, one of the greatest kings that Israel ever had. And we're going to talk about Elijah and Elisha, two of the more well-known prophets, probably prophets that you know more about than the others. But when we're talking about 1 and 2 Kings, we need to really get into the meat of what's going on here. So let's talk about the authorship, first of all. Truthfully, we really have no idea who wrote the books 1 and 2 Kings, or Kings, as we're going to refer to it from now on, okay? The more than likely author would have been Jeremiah. It's attributed traditionally to Jeremiah, as well as there are a lot of things that happen, as well as the last date in the books of 1 and 2 Kings that would lead us to believe that Jeremiah wrote it. It's in around the same time period in which Jeremiah was working. But one of the biggest things that I want you to understand about the authorship is that while we may not be able to exactly peg down who the author is, we do know that 1 and 2 Kings, there were three outside sources used to help write both of these books. And they're mentioned as well in 1 Kings. One of those is the Books of the Acts of Solomon, which is and in all that's got biographical data. It's got excerpts from the reign of Solomon, and it's actually in the temple archives in Israel. And then we have two royal archive historical books. One that's called the Book of Chronicles of the Kings of Israel, and the Book of Chronicles of the Kings of Judah. Now, this is not the Book of Chronicles. This is two secular renditions, retellings, of the history of Israel. So we have these outside sources to kind of help us validate the books of 1 and 2 Kings, or Kings. Now, as far as dealing with the time period that this is written, this would have been completed during the Babylonian captivity, more than likely about 561 BC, because the last date that's recorded in 2 Kings is post that. It's about 539 BC, before that. So it's about 539 BC when Cyrus and all of these things is going on. So we know that we've got this much later date that these books are completed versus what's going on. The actual time period that we're going to be covering in 1 Kings by itself is 120 years from the beginning of the reign of Solomon in 971 BC through the reign of Ahaziah in 851 BC. The real key date that you need to hone in on is 931 BC. That's when we're going to see the death of Solomon and the division of the kingdom back into Judah and Israel. Remember that under David, the kingdom has been united. Under Solomon, it's going to be united. But when Rehoboam comes on the scene, he's going to make a lot of very, very poor decisions and do a lot of things he ought not to do. And it's going to cause a rebellion led by Jeroboam that results in the splitting of the nation yet again, back to what it was in the days of Saul and pre-David during Judges and all of this time period. So we know that we're going to be covering all the time of the kings, right? We're going to be covering a lot of really, really rough history in the time of Israel. It's going to get very, very muddled when we get to these two books. I'm going to warn you ahead of time, there's a lot of chronology problems because it's going to be covering this united kingdom, and then we're going to be talking about the kings of both of the divided kingdoms going back and forth and flip-flopping in between, and sons that are trying to rule at the same time their fathers are, and there's just all kinds of crazy things that are going to come up. But to kind of help give you a guide of 1 Kings specifically, we can take 1 Kings and we can divide it into two sections, okay? We're going to have the United Kingdom under Solomon, which is going to be chapters 1 through 11. And then, of course, the divided kingdom under Rehoboam, Jeroboam, and all the other kings that will follow, which is in chapters 12 through 22. I want you to understand that 1 and 2 Kings is not just about history. It is the whole purpose of these two books is both prophetic, but it's also to show what is going to happen, what the spiritual condition is of the nation that results in the political turmoil that's going to happen in this country. See, we as God's people, we tend to forget that political turmoil always equals a heart problem, a spiritual problem, some sort of issue of the heart. And we're going to see that the reason the kingdom ends up in such a bad place to begin with is because of Solomon's woman problem, okay? Solomon brings in 300 wives, 700 concubines, or I'm sorry, I mixed that up, 700 wives, 300 concubines, like it's going to be this big, huge mess. He's more worried about money and sexual immorality and partying towards the latter part of his life. And his death of being divided between wanting to be a servant of God and wanting to chase after his flesh is going to leave a divided kingdom. And that's what these two books are trying to show. They're trying to show the spiritual sin and mistakes and problems and issues that actually manifest themselves into political issues and separations in the kingdom. It's very important that you and I understand that it's from the heart that all the problems of the world come. When we're not working in a positive way, we're allowing sin to come into our lives, that impacts more than just ourselves. And this is true for the United States and for anywhere else. That's the reality. If there's something going on around you that's wrong or it's spiritually incorrect, then more than likely it's because there is a spiritual problem in the leaders of that particular nation. And so we really want to hone in on that. And Elijah and Elisha are going to help with that because these two guys, that they don't back down to anybody. Elijah and Elisha are two very incredible prophets. They are fabulous men by all standards. In fact, Elijah will not even experience death. And we'll see that in 1 Kings. But to kind of give you a little bit of an overview of what's going on here, we're going to talk about Solomon's empire. We're going to talk about how Solomon breaks everything up into 12 districts to help him rule. And to give you an outline of the book itself, chapters 1 through chapter 3 is going to be the establishment of Solomon as king, okay? Our topics, we're going to talk about how the kingdom is at peace, Solomon is ruling, And chapters 1 through 12 is going to cover about 40 years of time. Jerusalem is going to be the capital of this United Kingdom. Things are looking good. Chapters 3 through 9 is going to be the rise of Solomon. His gaining of wisdom, taking back the land, all these things that are going to be happening. The Queen of Sheba coming to visit him, you know, or the Queen of the South, as some call her. There's going to be all kinds of things that are great that are happening during this time. But then chapters 9 through 12, we're going to see Solomon's decline. We're going to see him take that spiritual spiral that his father did towards the end of his life. And then by chapter 12, the kingdom is divided, okay? And from chapters 12 to 15, we're going to see the division of the kingdom. 15 through 16, there's going to be reigns of various kings that's going to be mentioned. 16 through 22 is going to be the reign of Ahab with Elijah, meaning Elijah coming in and getting a hold of Ahab and Jezebel and all these people that you probably know very well from the Bible. And during chapters 12 through 22, that's going to be a 90-year period we're going to talk about. It covers many kings. There is no peace in Israel and any of the kingdoms, by the way. Not in Israel north, Judah south. Everything's in turmoil. We're going to see the establishment of Samaria. You know, how the Jews in Jesus' day hated the Samaritans because they were part Assyrian and they were, you know, they were half-breeds and all this. Well, the city of Samaria, or the country of Samaria, where Israel is that city is going to be the capital of Israel, and it's going to be why it's so prominent in the days of Jesus. And then Jerusalem, of course, will remain the capital of Judah. But when we get to that point, chapters 12 going into 22, things are going to get a little messy. To kind of give you some highlights, we're going to talk about Jerusalem under Solomon and the good days and the bad days. We're going to talk about Solomon's amazing temple, probably one of the greatest accomplishments that happens during the time of Solomon's reign. It's a magnificent structure. It's very well done. But then shortly after all that comes to fruition, we're going to talk about the divided kingdom, how Rehoboam comes to power and Jeroboam rebels against him, which is going to basically deal with taxes, if that doesn't sound familiar to you. But we're going to talk about a divided kingdom. And then we're going to talk about Elijah, this prophet who appears from Tishbe in Gilead. We're not really sure where his hometown is, but that's where he's going to come from. There's no mention of his birth, his parentage, his family. There's even a potential that he was not an actual Israelite by birth. His name, in fact, means Yahweh is my God, or Yahweh is my God. And basically, it sounds kind of comes across in some areas like that's a motto for his life, that he is a follower of God no matter what his lineage is. So it's a very interesting character. He's going to be a very interesting prophet. He is going to do some very powerful things. He's the first one to go against Ahab. He's also going to be the one that announces to Ahab that dreaded famine that comes onto the country because of Ahab's sins and the fact that he's not acknowledging God as the leader of Israel. He's the one that says, it won't rain again until I pray. You guys remember that story? And what's great about that is that it's a direct challenge to Baal, the Canaanite god that Ahab and Jezebel are going to bring into Israel, which is the god of the storm or rain and fertility. So the fact that Elijah stops the rain from falling, it directly proves that this god is a fake at its source. Of course, there's also the fact that he never died or was buried. He's carried up in a whirlwind in heaven in a chariot. We know that he is still remains an important character, and he also helped to fulfill prophecy during the ministry of John the Baptist. John the Baptist was supposed to be the returning of Elijah. To kind of give you an idea of the life of Elijah, we're going to see him come from Tishbe on the eastern side of the Jordan River. And he's going to come in and he's going to predict God's punishment against Ahab and Ahaziah of Israel in Samaria about with the drought that we had just talked about. We're going to see the miraculous feeding of him by ravens while he is in hiding by the brook of Cherith. We're going to see him working miracles in Zarephath. We're going to see him take on the prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel. Y'all know about that one, don't you? That's a pretty famous time where he's, well, basically being sarcastic and asking them if their God is asleep. We're going to see him flee all the way to Beersheba and Mount Horeb after that to try to get away from Jezebel. And we see that, you know, the small whisper in the wind, remember, when God's talking to him in a still, hushed voice. And then we're going to see Elijah select Elisha as his successor at Abel Meholah. Whew, goodness. And Elijah taken up into heaven in the vicinity of Bethel and Gilgal. So that's kind of the eight big things that are going to happen in his life. Him and Elisha cover a lot of ground, guys. They cover all the way from the very southern tip of Judah all the way to the very northern tip of Israel and Zarephath. Like, they're going to cover a lot of ground. And Elijah, you know, he's going to do so many magnificent things with the slaying of the 450 prophets of Baal, spanning his ministry from the tip of that point in Canaan all the way to the south. Like, he is going to do some amazing things. And then his successor, Elisha, is as well. He's going to heal Naaman of leprosy. Now, this is getting more into 2 Kings. And he's going to help to lead the blinded Syrians to their defeat at Samaria. And he's even going to prophesy the death of King Ben-Hadad of Syria and the succession of Hazael as king of Syria. So there's the 1 Kings really starts to mesh into 2 Kings very quickly. And with 2 Kings, we're going to be talking more specifically about the tragic history of these two nations and how they're going to end up in captivity. Israel in Assyrian captivity, Judah in Babylonian captivity. There's going to be 19 evil kings who rule in Israel, which leads to that captivity by Assyria. And then Judah, however, it kind of flip-flops for a while. There's evil king, good king, evil king, good king, evil, you know, good. And it helps to keep them, I guess, out of captivity for longer, but eventually they're going to end up headed to Babylon. And so authorship's the same, but to give you the dates, we're covering about 457 years in 2 Kings, which makes it very hard to shift through everything. Chapters 1 through 17 is going to cover 131 years from 853 BC, which is King Ahaziah of Israel, to 722 BC, which is going to be the fall of Samaria and the Assyrian captivity of Israel. So 1 through 17, we're going to be talking mainly about Israel and its fall. Chapters 18 through 25 is going to be 155 years from the beginning of Hezekiah's reign in 715 BC to the release of Jehoiakim in Babylon in 560 BC. Then we're going to have this short period where we have this united kingdom that's only going to last for 112 years. That's 1043 BC to 931 that we're going to kind of talk about a little bit. Then we're going to have the northern kingdom of Israel existing for another 209 years, 931 to 722, and the southern kingdom of Judah, which is going to continue for an additional 136 years from 722 to 586. As you see, things get a little flip-flopped and a little mixed up. The purpose of 2 Kings and 1 Kings is not to give you a chronological history of Israel. It's to discuss the spiritual conditions that lead to the political turmoil. You've got to keep that in mind. And as we're studying through that, I'm going to help to guide you and say, okay, this is where we are now. So this actually happened here. We may even put this book into chronological order and kind of skip around a little bit in the book to make sure that you see the story flow the way that it did chronologically. But during this time period, one of the biggest things that's highlighted is this major shift in world power. See, today in modern times, we don't see a lot of shifts in world power because we haven't been doing a whole lot of conquering. You know, way back when, they were constantly at war, constantly struggling for control and world domination. The Egyptians wanted to take over the world, the Romans, the Greeks, the Trojans even at some points, the Assyrians, the Babylonians, the Syrians, not the Assyrians. We even some of the Asian countries during this time are all struggling for control. Everybody wants to control everything. And during this time, Egypt and Assyrian power over Palestine goes back and forth. One minute the Assyrians hold it, the next the Egyptians do. But finally, we'll see Assyria rise to preeminence, decline, and then they're going to be conquered by Babylon. And that's kind of where we find ourselves with 2 Kings. 2 Kings and then 1 and 2 Chronicles are almost synonymous. They cover a little bit of different things. Both still wanting to discuss the spiritual condition of the realm, as well as part of Chronicles talks a little bit about David as well. So it kind of goes back a little bit further than where 1 Kings starts. But what happens with Babylon right here at the end of 2 Kings is then we move into the book of Daniel, where we see all of this turmoil and takeover that starts to come into play. So to give you a little bit of an idea here, so we have 2 Kings is going to trace the history of the divided kingdom, and that's going to be in 1 through 17, and then it's going to talk about the history of the surviving kingdom of Judah in 18 through 25 until their takeover, okay? It's going, again, to talk about significant political and social events that have a spiritual problem behind them and why they have occurred. To give you an outline, we're going to have chapters 1 through 9. There's going to be the ministry of Elisha under Ahaziah and Jehoram. Then 9 through 17 is going to be the reign of 10 kings of Israel and 8 kings of Judah. So we cover a lot of ground pretty quickly. 17 through 18 is the fall of Israel. Both of these is going to be occurring between Israel and Judah. We're going to have Ahaziah to Hosea, as far as kings go. Location's going to be Israel, and then eventually deported to Assyria, and it's going to cover 131 years from 853 BC to 722. Then from chapters 18 to 22, we're going to have the reign of Hezekiah and then two evil kings. We'll talk about who those guys are. 22 to 25 is going to be the reigns of Hosiah or Josiah and four evil kings. We'll talk about those guys. And then eventually 25 to the end of 25 is the fall of Judah, which is Hezekiah to Zedekiah. Okay. And it's going to end from Judah to Judah being deported to Babylon. Covers 155 years from 715 to 560 BC. So we have all of these dates and this big mixture of things that's going to be happening during these books. But to give you a decent highlight of what we're going to be talking about, obviously, we're going to talk about the ministry of Elisha, which isn't quite as illustrious as Elijah's. But Elisha he's a pretty tough guy. He is very much, in many ways, like his predecessor. And so we're going to see him do some very interesting things at Damascus. He's going to predict that the wicked Hazael is going to succeed Ben-Hadad as king of Syria. At Shunem, Elisha brings back a widow's son from death. In Dothan and Samaria, Elisha protects these cities through chariots of fire by bringing blindness upon the Syrian army. And then in Syria and Edom, he continues Elijah's work all the way from the northern to the southern kingdoms. So he will do quite a few very interesting things. Of course, there's the pot of oil. Do y'all remember that? The oil that never runs out and these kinds of things. There's some very interesting things that we will cover with Elisha. Again, not as illustrious as Elijah, but he's still a very solid guy. Some other very interesting things that we're going to talk about as well is we're going to actually see a lot of history about other kingdoms in this, in the second half of the book of Kings. And we're going to see a lot about the Syrian rulers. There's even some interesting things from a secular point of view that we'll talk about as we're going through there, such as King Jehu's Black Obelisk and Sennacherib's Prism. Both of these are monuments that these men recorded their military campaigns and victories and all this over, that actually helped to prove a lot of the things that happen in 2 Kings and in the Bible. We see the siege of Jerusalem by Sennacherib of Assyria. We're going to see the visit of King Jehu of Israel to Assyria to pay tribute. So there's all kinds of amazing things that will help us with the chronology and putting it together, as well as we're going to learn a lot about the Assyrian kings and all of the things that they did and how these men's rule fell into play. And believe it or not, guys, it's very important for you to know a lot about the history of these ancient empires that come in and out of the storyline of Israel to help you get a very good understanding and grasp of the situation. For example, if you don't know that the Assyrians were these rough and gruff people that had a tendency to be genocidal and murderers, in a lot of ways, like the Nazis, a very militaristic country. If you don't know these things about them, then you don't understand a lot of the Jews' hatred and the things that are going on. Tiglath-Pileser, one of the kings that we will talk about while we're looking at both the secular side and the actual book of 1st and 2nd Kings, he was a rough guy. He was a guy who liked to kill a lot of people, and he led a lot of military campaigns, helped to spread Assyria's empire. And there's a lot of Assyrian campaigns that are mounted against Israel and Judah during 1st and 2nd Kings, and we're going to talk about those and how they were carried out. We're going to talk about the height of the Assyrian Empire to kind of give you this idea of everything they controlled and how they started to lose it all, because they kind of peak and then drop dramatically from power. We're going to talk about Jerusalem during Hezekiah. As you remember, Hezekiah was a good king, made some bad mistakes, had a tendency to get a little arrogant, maybe tell people more than they needed to know. But he was a very decent king who prayed and begged for God's mercy even after his mistakes. We're going to talk about the Babylonian kings, Nebuchadnezzar, right? And a lot of these guys that you will see in the book of Daniel. So we will talk about those Babylonian kings. And then just to kind of give you an overview here on the divided kingdom, for the southern kingdom, we are going to have this lineup of kings. We have Rehoboam, who is Solomon's son that follows him immediately after his death, reigns for 17 years. Then we have Abijam, who is the son of Rehoboam. He only lasts 3 years before things go terribly wrong. We'll have Asa, who is his son. He reigns for 41 years. Jehoshaphat, who is the son of Asa. He will reign for 25 years. And just automatically assume the guy before this was a son. I'll tell you if it's the other way around. We'll have Jehoram, Ahaziah. Then we actually have a queen in the middle of it, Queen Athaliah, and we'll talk about her. She is the daughter of Ahab. And the mother of Ahaziah, which is a kind of an interesting story. She's going to reign for 6 years. She's an interesting little peach. Joash, and then Amaziah, Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and then Hezekiah. And then to kind of give you, kind of going down here, we'll have Manasseh, who we all know was a bad guy, right? Amon, Josiah, Jehoahaz, Jehoiakim, Jehoiakin, and Zedekiah. So that's all of the kings we will have for the southern kingdom. Then on the northern kingdom, we will have Jeroboam the first. Make sure you remember that, Jeroboam the first, because there's more than one. Nadab, Baasha, Allah, Zimri, Omri, Ahab, Ahaziah. Do you notice that we have two Ahaziahs? We'll make sure to help you keep those separated, as well as Ahab's. And then we have Joram, Jehu, Jehoahaz, Jehoash, or Joash, as you will see in there, Jeroboam the second, Zechariah, Shalum, Mernahem, Pekah, Hoshea, and that will be the end of our kings. For the northern kingdom, because they get taken over very quickly. The southern kingdom lasts much longer than the northern kingdom. But so you see, we're going to talk a lot about a lot of different kings. There's going to be a lot of verses associated with them. Some of these kings are talked about not only in Chronicles, but even in the book of Jeremiah, because we were going to have prophets such as Jeremiah, Habakkuk, Daniel, all these guys that play a role in the time period and the kingship of some of these kings. So we're going to have just a lot to talk about with that, as well as we will be wrapping it up with talking about Nebuchadnezzar's campaigns against Judah. And then, of course, I mentioned to you that the chronology of these books is not very well done. They're not chronologically written because that's really not the goal of them. They're not trying to give you this accurate history lesson over what's going to happen in during the rules of these kings, but rather they want you to understand the spiritual condition of a leader's heart can affect the physical condition, the political condition, the culture of the people that are around them that they are leading. It helps you to understand the importance of limiting sin in your life as much as possible. I know nobody can be perfect, but you ought to be trying to live every day like you want to be and can be. But we need to understand that sin affects so much more than us. And those of us that are in a leadership position, such as myself as a pastor, we have to take it very seriously, the decisions that we make and the things that we do, because there are people that are looking to us that we may cause to stumble and fall, or we may even cause the falling of an entire nation or an entire church, just depending on what it is that you're doing. It's so very important that you understand that you have a God that is watching you, that you need to be living and meeting the expectations and standards of. And that's what the First and Second Kings is going to try to show you with everything that's going on is, well, look at the spiritual condition of the king, now understand the spiritual condition of the people as a result of that king's behavior. That is 1st and 2nd Kings in a nutshell. I definitely challenge you to go do some secular studying at the Assyrian Empire, the Syrian Empire, the Babylonian Empire. Kind of help get your mind around some of those leaders, such as Tiglath-Pileser and Sennacherib and all these guys. They are very important, and there are some things that are going to happen that we don't get to talk about in 1st and 2nd Kings because, the purpose is not to give you history. It is to give you the spiritual understanding of what's going on in the kingdoms. But there's going to be some things that happen in these kingdoms where you can see God moving in secular history while still maintaining his control and punishment over his own people and trying to bring them back to what they are supposed to be. And guys, we're starting to get to a point in the Old Testament where you see God beginning to set up the stage for the return of his son. There is some amazing things. I mean, it's tragic. There's a lot of tragic history we're going to talk about. I wish that the people of Israel had gotten their act together and that their rulers had. But there's a lot of things that you're going to be like, man, that's terrible. But look at how God is setting up this specific occurrence right here. Look at how God is influencing what's going to happen right here. And you're going to see a lot more of that as we get into Daniel and Esther and a lot of these ones who are living through the captivity. They're not actually in Judah or Israel. They are in captive, they are under captivity in, you know, Babylon and Syria and all of these places. So, I challenge you, go look at some secular history, do some reading on these kings, go kind of look at 1st and 2nd Kings for yourself, don't intimidate yourself, don't overdo yourself as far as studying goes, because it gets a little interesting to have to wade through, but try to get some more background on the books. Go look at the Black Obelisk that I told you about. Go look at Sennacherib's prism, some of these archaeological artifacts that we have that help to prove and show the dates and times of a lot of the things that are going to happen in 1st and 2nd Kings, or collectively Kings. So with all of that said, this has been Studies Through the Bible with Pastor Zach Ebarb. I've enjoyed you getting to be here. I hope you have a lovely day and a lovely week. God bless all of you. Get out of here and go study.